Hour number three on this Tuesday afternoon. Darren, Donnie, and Chase live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Bridgestone Arena tonight, Predators and Anaheim Ducks. 7 o'clock puck drop, pregame at 6. Everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5. The game, Mitch Light, Athlon Sports, also Vanderbilt sideline reporter. Before we get into the hot and heavy college football topics, you want to weigh in on what the spread would be if one Wiley DeNuke was under center on Saturday versus Arkansas. So you do not agree with our conversation.
I would bet on Arkansas.
What?
And I have the utmost respect for Willie's athletic
ability. What would
ability
be the
as
points?
A former two, right. two sport.
To say, lose the game? Like Alabama loses the game,
yes,
with Willie
if
as Willie's quarterback?
If quarterback for Alabama, Arkansas would beat Alabama.
Wow, this is deflating.
The question is, would I be in the hospital at the end of the game? I mean...
Well,
I would get
I
lit
you,
up by somebody.
Hand it off, throw screens, just get out of the way, man.
Yeah, then throw five
interceptions. I'm not the biggest John Chavis fan, but I think he'd figure out the game plan with Willie Donning at quarterback.
You think Chief could game plan Willie?
I think. He might harken back to some of the old Woody teams from the late 90s offenses and take out that game plan again.
The first thing he would say would be like, this guy's how old? 48?
Are we playing BYU? What is going on?
This guy's been on a mission for the last 25 years.
Speaking of which, and not to get too far down a rabbit hole, I was looking up because BYU started a freshman at quarterback. Romney was his last name, and he might even be a Mitt Romney relative, whatever. But I was looking. He graduated high school. I wanted to see what kind. You know, a lot of times when there's a freshman at a school like that I'm not familiar with, I look up their recruiting rankings to see how highly they're recruited. He was in the class of 2015.
Yeah.
And he's a freshman.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know you got your two-year mission. We could have been a redshirt there. So, it really, I mean, he's going to be, you know, 26 20s. when he's done with college. So.
I had an interesting discussion with Kevin Dyson.
Aren't
about
all of
that.
Your discussions interesting, Willie?
The ones I bring to the table for on air.
Yeah, okay.
At least I would like to think so. But Kevin Dyson grew up in Utah, and he played at the University of Utah. But I asked him about that. I was like, is it a big advantage? You know, shouldn't it be? Like, in theory, I would think if I were playing college basketball at 24 or 25, I was a much better player then than when I was 18 or 19.
Just physically.
But he said,
more developed.
You got to remember, though, they go away for 2 years and they don't play at all. They're not weight training. They're not practicing.
Their diets aren't great.
Yeah, they're off who knows where on this mission. So I guess for some people they can come back and do well, but for others they don't. That's why they don't win the national championship every year.
No, their players aren't as good. I mean, I would think it's a positive, though.
You think overall it's a positive?
Yeah. You've got linemen coming back 20 years old. Sure, they might be a little bit out of shape, but it's just natural. You're going to be more physically ready to
– mature.
Mature.
Yeah.
You're going to be more mature at 21 than you are at 18. Just think of some teams that – like Tennessee's forced to – they're starting two true freshmen on the offensive line. Those are – high five-star players, they're 2 years older, they're that much more developed. And even though there might be a little bit of a setback from not being around the sport for 2 years.
It probably also depends on the player.
Sure.
Like some players are probably better at jumping back in.
Sure.
Others might be like, I haven't played in a couple of years. Do I really want to play?
And basketball is more of a kind of, I think, riding the bicycle type sport. You know, it's like getting back on the bike and it comes more, your skills come back. Whereas
football
is
a little bit different.
More physical, more demanding physically.
So Tua had surgery on his right ankle. Okay, he is out against Arkansas, which is what I've said is basically a bye week for Alabama. They've got two straight off weeks before the big one. They're going to get by no matter who they put under center against Arkansas. Arkansas is horrendous. So everything is going to shift to what does this mean for November 9th? Because that is setting up for the college football game of the year, right? Alabama and LSU in Tuscaloosa. What is your gut? Who people you're talking to? I mean, do you think there's a real shot that Tua he's not able to play for this game? And if so, what does that mean for this game? Can LSU actually walk in there and walk out with a victory?
I would have thought before Tua's injury, you know, 2 weeks to make the prediction, things change, Alabama struggles against Arkansas, you know, weird things can happen. I would have felt good about LSU's chance. I feel good about LSU's chances to win in Tuscaloosa with both teams being completely
healthy. No matter
what? Yeah. I'm not saying I would have picked them.
Okay.
But
I would.
I don't.
So with Tua, you could still think LSU could win this game?
Could win the game. I think they're built differently. They don't need to be as perfect. When you're playing 10-7 games or 17-7 games, you need to be perfect to beat Alabama. If you're playing 38, 31 games, there's more possessions, there's more, you can overcome turnovers, you don't have to be as perfect. If Tua's not healthy or if Tua's not playing, I think LSU becomes the clear favorite. We just don't know. If he plays and he's healthy, there's no way any of us know, with an ankle especially, how healthy you are, how much it affects your game. Can you run? Can you move in the pocket? So it's just, we're gonna sit here and speculate for 2 weeks, but I give LSU a great shot to win that game.
How much do you think, and I know this is still a little off, but, I mean, we've already been talking about it all year, the tanking for Tua in Miami. But how much do you think, now this is his other ankle, right? I mean, we know his ankle came into question last year, and they were able to get away with it at the end in the first playoff game, and he looked fine. But then when they went up against Clemson, you know, he was not the same, and obviously we know the outcome of that. And now it's this ankle. How much do you think that is going to be a concern, or will it, that people are going to start going, does he have ankle issues?
This is, you know, just me from the outside, obviously no sort of medical expert or anything like that. I would think that injury, like, that happened on Saturday, someone fell, or zone player, and his ankle bent in a weird way. That's going to happen to anyone. It's not like he has structural issues to his knee like we're talking about, right? Zion Williamson, where the people are wondering long-term, or someone had a shoulder surgery as a freshman and they're still suffering some ill effects from that. I don't see it like that. I think it might be just two fluke incidents.
Football plays.
If I'm drafting a quarterback, you ask me the list of injuries that I'm okay with, probably ankle injuries. I know people are built differently. Structure of your bones and muscles and all that stuff, your tendons, everyone's different.
Don't think he gets labeled when it comes to combine time? And
I would think not. I would think not.
Okay.
I guess if I'm Miami, I would prefer to draft a quarterback who's never been hurt, but I don't think it would affect my decision.
Okay. This is a critical, critical game in Ann Arbor on Saturday, right? Or I don't know. You're going to tell us.
It's an important game for Michigan's season this year.
Okay, but what if they lose this game? What does that mean?
It means they have three losses for the year. Jim Harbaugh's not getting fired.
You do not believe any – no way, no how this doesn't do anything?
If they lose, they'd be 5-3. If they go 5-7 and they get blown out and never he's not getting fired.
But you know this is not just another loss.
But this is us talking on sports radio 1,000 miles away. At Michigan, they're not fired. Ward Manuel, the athletic director, is not firing Michigan.
But is he leaving?
So you think they're all just in a bubble and a cocoon, that the whole country says that basically Jim Harbaugh doesn't win big games, and they don't hear any of that noise? Like, the whole country is talking about it, but in Ann Arbor, they're in a bubble, and nobody knows.
I'm not saying that. I think their expectations and the way they look at their program from the interior is not the same way. And I think it's probably at every school. They have their own set of expectations and their own set, the way they value their program, and then everyone else does. Just because knuckleheads like us at Athlon Sports picking to make the college football playoff and they don't make it, maybe Ward Manuel, maybe at Michigan, they did not have those same expectations. And I'm not sitting here saying that Michigan doesn't expect to win championships. Of course they do. But I'd be shocked if he got fired.
This is year five, though, right?
Yeah, I'd be shocked. Now, what Chase just said, if he decides he wants to go back to the NFL or something, That's a whole other story.
Well, I've thrown that out many times. I don't believe he'll get fired. He'll probably just leave. Because at some point, this is going to get weird. I understand what you're saying, but at some point, it's going to get weird and hairy. If they lose again, especially at home to Notre Dame, this is a huge rivalry game. And this whole narrative that he never wins any of these big games, it's the same thing Notre Dame battles with, right? It's the same narrative for them. They don't ever win the big games.
Big games are the only games that you lose.
But when you go to Michigan,
say about Peyton Manning in college.
But when you go to Michigan and Notre Dame, that's what I'm saying. You don't bring in certain people to beat Air Force and Navy and Illinois and Indiana. Like, they can get coaches to do that. They bring them in to take them to that next level. Fair?
Yeah, and I mean, you could argue that Jim Harbaugh has raised Michigan's profile since taking over from Brady Hoke, that they're consistently more competitive.
Do they have a profile with Brady Hoke?
Let's say they go 8-4 this year and there's no expectations next year and they break through and they win the Big Ten. Like, weird things happen. Tennessee wins its national championship the year after Peyton Manning. It took Tom Osborne a long time to win a national championship at Nebraska. I know we live in a different era, and I think you go back to Bob Stoops at Oklahoma, and there's another Urban Meyer, coaches who won championships in year two. They changed the timeline for all these coaches. So I'm not going to sit here and say Jim Harbaugh is doing a great job. I just I'm not buying into the quote-unquote narrative that he's on the hot seat. I don't see that.
I mean, he's already lost to Penn State. That just happened. He loses to Ohio State. I mean, I just think at some point, I mean, they can.
You're not going to get me to change my mind. You can.
I know, but I mean, you can't just keep acting like there's nothing to see here if you're Michigan. I mean, there's no way.
They're 5-2 right now.
They don't hire and pay Jim Harbaugh what they did to keep losing to Penn State and Ohio State and not ever winning a conference. Forget getting to the playoffs. They haven't won a conference.
They beat Penn State 42-7 last year.
Okay.
Are you saying they never? Is that not a big game?
Yeah.
Okay. But we don't talk about that because we don't win big games, but we won that game.
This is this year. And this
you said he never wins big games.
Was Penn State ranked last year that game?
Yeah, no. 17.
Last year?
Yeah, I'm looking right at College Football Reference.
I think, to be fair, they've won some games that you would have to say are big. Like the year that Penn State almost was in the playoffs, they got throttled by Michigan. I think the knock is the big games on the road in particular.
Right.
They've struggled a lot, and they have not been. In fact, just the way they battled back and had a chance to tie the game was fairly significant because they've had a lot of lopsided losses against in the big games on the road.
Well, I mean, yeah, they went to Wisconsin and just got chewed up and spit out this year, and Wisconsin just lost to Illinois.
He's 29-11 in the Big Ten. That's pretty good. Playing in the Big Ten East with Michigan State's being at a program high with Ohio State. With Penn State, I think that's – he went 6-2, 7-2, 5-4, 8-1. He's 3-2 this year. You think he should be fired?
It's not a matter of what I think.
Well, you asked me my opinion. I said, keep pushing
if
back.
If you're asking me, do I think he's doing as great of a job as you're painting the
I'm
picture?
I'm not saying
no.
He's doing as great of a job. You asked me if he should get fired, and I said no.
Let's put yourself in the shoes of a diehard Michigan fan. The choice is, do you make noise and say, we want somebody else – because you're already because
all
have
your
a lot
other
invested,
choices have been great.
You have a lot of invested money in Harbaugh. You know what the school would have to pay to get rid of him if you really wanted to get rid of him. And then who's the alternative?
See, now here's something.
Who would you rather have? I think that's where if you're realistic, you say we can't make a move here.
Well, now I'm going to give you a point, okay? Because this is going to be a point for you.
I don't need any points from you.
Well, I'm going to give you one anyway, whether you're going to take it or not. Brady Hoke and Rich Rodriguez. I mean, so they can throw. You can throw back in my lap. Well, okay, well, great.
That's why I said
you got to trust those people to go make a better hire.
That's why I said they raised Jim Harbaugh. Don't think he's achieved what you think is possible there, he has raised the level of play at Michigan in his four plus seasons there. They are better than they were in the previous five seasons.
Why don't you think he's been able to get the quarterback? That position,
literally,
like that is supposed to be
really
his specialty. And why has it been I mean, I don't want to say an epic failure, but it hasn't worked to the level that everybody thought.
Yeah, and that's literally before I came over here, I was doing a radio show in Omaha, Nebraska. We were talking about the exact same thing about Miami's struggles, and I just said, you know what? It's the quarterback position. When you have when you don't have the right quarterback, you have to be so good elsewhere. You know, your margin for error isn't as great. Same thing at Michigan. His best season of quarterback play was probably Jake Rudock, the grad transfer from Iowa, I think, in year two. Shea Patterson seemed like the ideal fit there, or maybe not fit for the scheme at the time, but fit for this scheme. He was, you know, maybe a little misevaluated. I don't know. And that has been a big problem. At Stanford, he got Andrew Luck. That was a huge recruiting coup. And Andrew Luck, obviously one of the best college quarterbacks we've seen. But that is a – look at Ohio State. Ohio State has had, off the top of my head, good quarterback play pretty much every year in the past 8 to 10 years. Different styles, different guys, some better than the other. Quarterback has never been a weakness at Ohio State in this recent run. It has not been a strength at Michigan, except maybe Rudock was second-team all-conference that year.
Right, and it's not like Ohio State's been bumping number one picks, you know, in the draft from the quarterback position.
Right. Right.
Most of their quarterbacks that have been very successful until Haskins this year aren't even getting drafted, right? Or at least changing positions.
I mean, I'm just looking through 2017, John O'Korn, Brandon Peters, who's now the quarterback at Illinois, Wilton Spate, who transferred to UCLA, 2018, Shea Patterson. Now, they like Dylan McCaffrey, the sophomore who got hurt earlier this year, but, you know, they thought Shea Patterson was going to be good as well. So, you know, Wilton Spate. 2015 was, Shane Morris, who ended up finishing his career at Central Michigan. So it's not like these guys haven't been highly recruited.
Right. All right, we will come back on the other side. We'll talk about Vanderbilt's big win. There's also some big games in the conference. A lot more to get into on the college football side. Mitch Light, Athlon Sports, here at the table with us. That's all next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hanging out at Pete and Terry's Tavern on the Sobro side of Bridgestone Arena. Tonight, it's the Predators and the Anaheim Ducks. We'll have more on that game a little bit later. If you missed our interview with David Poile, you can go to thegamenashville.com and check it out. And always remember, you can come by and have lunch with us. And we've got the lunch special going on. And it is a burger.
And a beer.
And a beer.
$12.50.
Pretty good deal. Mitch Light is here with us, talking college football. He is with Athlon Sports, also Vanderbilt sideline announcer. Mitch, I think even the most optimistic of Vanderbilt fans, and I mean there are some that are unbelievably optimistic based on everything we've seen. I think even those people were shocked at how well they played against Missouri, a team that had scored, 30 or more points in 11 straight games, a nation high, right? Nobody does.
Even
the Oklahomas have not had 30 or more in 11 straight. And Vanderbilt held them to 14. There were just so many things that were eye-popping about that game. How did they do it?
Yeah, and the one thing about the scoring the 21 points, seven of them were set up by an interception down to like the two-yard line, literally.
The first pass by Riley Neal.
Yeah, so basically the defense gave up 14 points, and that's the most surprising. If you would have told me that Vanderbilt would have, even with the offensive struggles, really, that Vanderbilt would have won this game, I'd probably say 31-28, weird special team stuff, defensive scores. Did not see a defensive battle like this. Yeah, and based on what we had seen before this season, not just the UNLV game, pretty much every other game, just the lack of competitiveness, that's what made this game that surprising. Missouri, I had my questions about Missouri. People after Georgia losing and Florida losing, people were saying maybe Missouri's the team to beat. Or I thought Missouri before the season was the third best team in the East. I still think they're probably the third best team in the East. They had played six straight home games or five straight after that Wyoming game. The best team they had played was South Carolina. So they still had a lot to prove going on the road and clearly didn't handle it well. Obviously, I'm talking from the Missouri standpoint. Probably didn't think they'd be in a quote-unquote dogfight early on and didn't handle it well. I thought Vanderbilt's defensive line, which was shorthanded, Davion Davis, true freshman nose guard who started the last two games, was out with an injury. So they were shorthanded. I thought Vanderbilt really controlled Vanderbilt's defense controlled Missouri's offensive line, got in as much pressure on Kelly Bryant as Vanderbilt has gotten on a quarterback in recent memory, and then offensively, a lot of credit to Mo Hassan. I know he went out with an injury, but he just looked calm in there, and he added that dimension that this offense has not had, the running quarterback. I thought this year, what you lose in Kyle Shermer's passing, I thought that whether it be Riley Neal or Deuce Wallace running the ball would kind of balance that to some degree. Well, we haven't really seen that from those two guys. So Mo Hassan adds the running element, and you can say he's not as good of a passer. We don't really know that yet. He did hit Kalijah Lipscomb on one deep ball, but it's not like Vanderbilt was throwing the deep ball either anyway with those guys. So, and Keyshawn Vaughn continues to – his numbers aren't as eye-popping as last year, but he's probably having a better all-around season.
I agree. The tough yards that he got late where they basically milked
six
the clock.
Six-plus minutes.
Yeah.
In a 7-point
lead. That
was
impressive. Yeah. And that doesn't show up necessarily in big eye-popping numbers. He had the great screen pass. He's still a home run hitter. But the way he can accelerate, carry tacklers forward, if I'm a pro scout, I have to like a lot of what I'm seeing.
And I've talked to a lot of Jerry Godowski about this, the offensive coordinator, just how much more of a complete back he is. And that was, fans sometimes would complain last year about him not being on the field some, and some of those complaints were valid, but a lot of them had to do with his other issues, not just running the ball. He's out there pretty much every down unless he needs a blow. Pass protection, like you said, he can catch the ball. We've seen him do that. Just a really good overall performance by Vanderbilt. Again, you like the way they closed the game. Getting stops in the fourth quarter, forcing a long field goal with two sacks, and then running out the last 6 minutes of the clock. So just and give that staff a ton of credit. I was in the locker room after the UNLV game. If you would have told me that group of guys right there was going to come out and play its best game of the season, I wouldn't have believed it.
There were so many games where they couldn't cover anybody, they couldn't stop the run. There were a number of plays, as I go back in my mind through the game, where Kelly Bryant, a mobile quarterback, is running around. He had enough time looking down the field and just could not find anybody. So where did the coverage, where did the speed, they seemed like they were flying to the ball a lot better. How did the light go on there?
Good question. I will say there was
looked like a totally different team.
There was a much better energy from the team from the get-go. And that's one thing that Joe Fisher comes down to me early in the game to ask me, because it's one thing you can sense down there, you know. And there was just, sometimes it's forced, sometimes it's not. There was, like, legitimate energy on the sidelines there. And then I think just it took a couple stops early to get some confidence. Interesting thing about Missouri, and one thing, when they came into the league, and before we knew they were going to be pretty good, those 2 years they went back-to-back, from being on the sidelines, one thing I noticed is how good-looking their wide receivers were. They used to have these big, tall, 6'2", 6'3", wide receivers, real physical specimens. Whatever. So I noticed, and I said this. I said this on the broadcast to Joe. You know, they've got a good offense, but you look at their wide receivers, like Jonathan Johnson's a pretty big dude, but other than that, they're more of the 5'11", 5'10", quicker guys. So I don't know if that had anything to do with the matchup there, but I did notice that Missouri's a good running team. They've got good running backs. I don't think they're as good at wide receiver as they've been, but I can't, you know, I'd love to, you know, give some truth serum to the defensive staff and ask them if it was just effort, if they did different things. But you're right. Their coverage was a lot better.
Let's go around the league a little bit. Auburn is at LSU. I know a lot of people are really looking forward, as we talked about in the first segment, about LSU against Alabama. Is this the classic look-ahead game? I see LSU as a double-digit favorite. I see Auburn as a team that is dangerous, though. Am I crazy to think that they could go down there and win?
Remember, LSU and Alabama are both off before their big game, right? Both are off?
Yes. Yeah, okay.
So there's a week in between what I'm thinking. It's not the next Saturday, but still,
Let me confirm that. LSU plays Auburn, yes, and they're off. So yes.
I feel like this is a good time. I still think it's a good time to play LSU.
Yeah, I think Auburn, I give Auburn a lot of credit. I know Darren is not very fond of the Arkansas football team, basically, from what I've heard on this broadcast. No. I thought Arkansas actually
would make. The fake punt would on make, Saturday, you know, it
you
did
know,
it in.
You know who that punter was?
Who?
Sam Loy, former Vanderbilt punter.
Oh, really?
He was a starting punter at Vanderbilt his first 2 years. I don't think he got along with the – he was highly recruited. He picked Vanderbilt. This is all coming full circle. Michigan was hot after him. Jim Harbaugh, he picked Vanderbilt over Michigan. He was one of the top-rated punters. I don't think he got along with Vanderbilt's former special teams coach. He was going to transfer to Colorado, but they ended up at Arkansas, and he's been Arkansas's punter the last few weeks. So I was watching those highlights, and I heard Sam Law is like, I remember that dude. Not a good pass. So I thought Arkansas might make Auburn sweat because despite their struggles, they do have some good skill position players. So I credit Auburn for going on the road and being really businesslike and just
crushed them.
Taking care of business there.
When they have it revved up, they look pretty good. The question probably is, I think you've been saying all year, how much progress has the freshman quarterback made?
Offensive efficiency. And their outstanding running back Whitlow is out, too. Now, they had guys against Arkansas that could make up the difference. I don't know if these other guys are, you know, Cam Martin, some of those guys are good enough against LSU. The thing that I like in this spot for LSU is I think they're a pretty veteran team. I think Joe Burrow, fifth-year guy, some of their receivers, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back. Burrow, if I'm him, I'm like, I didn't get this far. I didn't pay my dues at Ohio State, go through what I did last year to get this far in my career, to stub my toe the week before the Alabama game. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to win the game, but I don't see them overlooking Auburn in any stretch. I think this is – you're right. If you're Auburn and you could pick a time to play him, you probably would want to pick the week before Alabama. But I have confidence in this LSU team to kind of take care of business.
I'm going to leave this wide open to take where you want to go because I think these two teams have had some really interesting last few weeks. But South Carolina at Tennessee – a big, big swing game for both teams. It's a huge game for South Carolina based on their strength of schedule, the toughness of their schedule. And Tennessee has been showing some signs of progress here. So how do you see
that? Yeah, I can't get a feel for this game. I picked Tennessee outright against Mississippi State a couple weeks ago. I just thought that was a good spot.
Can't get a feel for Tennessee, period.
Yeah, and I would have picked – I picked 10 games against the spread on our website every week, and I had Tennessee down that I was going to pick them to cover. If I knew more about the quarterback situation, if I felt better about the quarterback situation, I would give Tennessee a better chance. And then you think this is a good spot for them, and you think 2 weeks ago, South Carolina goes into Georgia and wins. What is that Georgia defensive line going to do to a young Tennessee offensive line? And if Tennessee's not getting great quarterback play, you don't know if Brandon Maurer's going to play. And even if he does, he's throwing big interceptions. So, gun to my head, I think I'd pick Tennessee in this game, but I don't have a strong feel because, again, I think Tennessee, South Carolina defensively can cause some problems for Tennessee up front and force the quarterbacks into making some big mistakes. But I think there's no doubt Tennessee's playing better football right now, despite, Tua going out and all the refereeing controversy and all that, Tennessee played a pretty good game. Did a lot of good things at Alabama last weekend.
Missouri, now after having the thorn, has to go to Kentucky. Where do you see Kentucky right now in their journey? We know they've had the big injuries here. How have they coped with it? They're sitting at 1-4 in the league and 3-4 overall. To get to a bowl game would mean a lot for Kentucky based on what they lost from last year and then the injuries on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their remaining schedule. They're 3-4, Missouri and Tennessee at home, at Vanderbilt, Tennessee, Martin, and Louisville at home. If they can get healthy, they can get on a little bit of a run here, but I don't know if they can get healthy enough. Darren, you might know it. Sawyer Smith, I think, is going to be available this week at quarterback. You would think he's a better option than, you know, Lynn Bowden, who's a great athlete, but, you know, is limited, obviously, at the quarterback position. They were fortunate to beat Arkansas 2 weeks. I like Missouri to get back on track in this game. I just think that they are clearly a better team than they showed up the street last week. I think Kentucky's just offensive limitations are going to be too much to overcome.
And don't forget last year's game, too. They'll be thinking about that. Right? I mean, that was one of the more bizarre games of the year last year, which Kentucky came out on top. I was honestly surprised. I thought Georgia would absolutely destroy them.
I didn't see much of the game. How much of the weather impact do you think?
I mean,
Fromm's numbers were brutal.
But think about, I thought South Carolina's weather was way sloppier, and look at that game. That was, you know, they put up, what, 58 points between the two teams?
Well, Kentucky's been good defensively.
But it was no score. When was the first
third quarter?
Third quarter, midway through the third quarter, still no score.
I got home, I think I got home from the Vanderbilt game, and I turned it on. I saw 0-0, and I expected to see the
weather
the
delay.
One by the quarter. It's like, whoa, third quarter.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they're making a big deal about how Kentucky hadn't completed a pass, and then you turn it on and they complete a pass.
Let's kick this around before we go to the break. Georgia, where they sit right
now. That's kind of where I was going.
I mean,
like, what
are they? The game against South Carolina was the classic. They got stuck. They got nervous at home. The crowd was nervous.
That's almost better to be on the road in that game.
Exactly. I thought they just never got the switch on. And then something freakish would happen, and the kid made some great plays in the defensive secondary. I mean, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. They didn't bounce back the way I thought. But there's got to be something better there.
All right, let's talk about Georgia. Yeah. And some other ones on the other side. More with Mitch Light from Athlon Sports, also Vanderbilt sideline reporter. Next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren, Donick, and Chase. Mitch Light from Athlon Sports is hanging out with us as he does every Tuesday at noon here at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. So the question was asked, and we were all going to expand upon Georgia and what we think about the Georgia Bulldogs right now. I'll start and say I guess the last 2 weeks is showing us maybe they're a little overrated.
Yeah, but you know what? Wouldn't we all say that we've been thinking that about Florida all year? And
yeah.
Now I think Georgia's in a different – I view Georgia differently because I viewed Georgia as
– You did see them firsthand.
Right, as one of the elite teams, which they should have been to start the season. You know, you had your – Clemson, Alabama, that upper Oklahoma. About the 3 or 4 week mark, we saw about six teams separate themselves, we thought. And Georgia was in that group until they lost. I think I'd go back more than just 2 weeks. The first half of the Tennessee game, they did not, they struggled. And they made some plays at the end of the half to get up, 26-14 and dominated. You know, Notre Dame didn't love the way they closed that game there. So you can poke holes at these. When teams, I say it all the time, when teams are this good, you try and poke holes. What will prevent them from maybe winning a national championship? And I think it's fair to say Georgia, their lack of explosiveness on offense and their conservative nature. They play like Alabama played early in the Nick Saban era, where they're just going to run the ball, they play defense, and they don't mind winning 20-10. Well, LSU and Alabama, they love winning 42-20, and they're just more dynamic offensively. Now, Georgia's limited at the wide receiver position. They've got talent, but those guys are young. They don't have the experience there. But I think it's valid to criticize Georgia's just their whole MO, the way they go about it.
Well, I mean, you can bring up the first game because, I mean, Chase and I sat in the stands. Yeah. We weren't blown away by Georgia, but we chalked it up. It's first late game. August, first game of the season.
Big lead. And they were way ahead.
Right,
they
got way ahead. Right.
Just cruise, don't show anything.
Yeah. So we weren't really looking into it too much, but, I mean, if we were just being honest, and I think we said on the show, it's not like we went out there and went, whoa.
And if you saw LSU 3 weeks later on that same field.
Right.
It was a little more of a wow.
Yeah, it was a wow. Yeah. Definitely.
I thought that Georgia, like you guys, had another gear and they would show more, another dimension to their offense. But This would concern me, too, if I'm a pro scout trying to evaluate Jake Fromm. It's a pretty simple passing game. Most of the plays for a couple years now have been very simple, high-percentage passes. And I kept thinking, okay, here's South Carolina. Here's where you need a jolt. You need to come up with another dimension. They're on you, right? They're stopping your stuff. Everybody's getting tight. Break loose. Show me a little diversity in the offense, a little wrinkle here, and nothing. But here, the other thing I am clinging to if I'm a Georgia fan is you lose that game against South Carolina is the letdown of, oh, we lost. We're not going to be undefeated going into – are we still going to be able to get to the playoffs, all that stuff. It should rev back up. Right?
Yeah, they have ample opportunity to prove to mentally. Everyone they're the team that we thought they could be.
Yes.
Now, from what we've seen in the past month, are they good enough to run the table? They have to play better. They're good enough, but they have to play better. You know, Florida in 2 weeks, neutral field.
By the way, both are off this week, and then it's the game in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Then, so right now, like, who would you lean toward today? Because we're not going to see neither one of them until they play each other.
If Florida's at full strength defensively, I might go Florida. But they're banged up on the defensive line, two key guys out. That's going to be...
But they're still finding ways, though.
I know
they've lost one, but
they didn't
still
have them in the South Carolina game, and they still...
Right, but yeah. Georgia's... I was going to say Georgia's better than South Carolina, which I still think Georgia is better than South Carolina, but they lost the game. That's... You got the LSU-Alabama, and then Georgia-Florida. It's great to see both those teams play. The key is the injuries. You just want to see all those teams at full strength. We've already talked about Tua. Florida's so much better when their defensive line is at full strength. I think I still say, and this isn't being critical of Florida, they're very, very good. And in year two under Dan Mullen, they've done great things. They're just not the same team offensively that Alabama is, that LSU is, and Georgia at its best. They're just the offensive line's limited.
But what's interesting is that game down in Jacksonville, Winner is still alive for the whole big picture.
Oh, sure.
Yes. Well, Winner's going to Atlanta.
What? No, I know. That's not the big picture.
Right, but that's a part of it.
Right. That puts you in the spot to go even further. That's what I'm saying. The winner is alive for the whole shebang.
Now, Georgia still has to play Missouri at home and then at Auburn. Florida after that. They have
their path
at Missouri,
is easier.
But Missouri has owned them. It's like 5-2 since – I think Missouri might be 5-2 or something like
that. Owned Florida?
Yes. Look at the recent scores. Yeah. And then they get Florida State at home.
Path is way easier.
Georgia has the bigger hurdle.
Yeah.
But I think if you're the committee, too, and you're looking at both of these teams, I think a loss to LSU definitely looks better for Florida than obviously a loss to South Carolina.
Sure. At LSU, close game versus a home game. But it's not going to matter because the team that wins it, the team that loses is not going to be in contention.
Right.
So that's a good point, but they won't be comparing those two teams.
Yeah, loser goes home.
It's a loser leaves town match.
Yep.
Okay, so with what you were saying about Florida, injuries, talent, whatever, are we seeing because of how they've played this year, and I'll even say how they played against LSU in the loss, just how good Dan Mullen really is as head coach?
Yeah, I think so. By the way, it's Florida's – Missouri's 4-3 against Florida in the 7 years Missouri's been in the league, not 5-2. Yeah, but you're preaching to the choir. I've been a Dan Mullen guy since Mississippi State. You look at what he did there. A great offensive coach, can win different styles offensively. Like, this isn't the style he wants to play. He wants more of a running quarterback. I think that's why Felipe Franks, not Kyle Trask, got the job there. So yeah,
are they better with him?
It's hard to argue that they're not. Yeah, I mean, I think they are.
They would be. They're a better team because of that, right?
I think so.
Well, Braden on our morning show, your colleague at Athlon, has been high on the Kyle Trask train for a long time.
It's hard
time,
not to be. He makes the plays. LSU game, his toughness. He played great down there. I'm a huge Dan Mullen guy. I think Florida's just going to continue to get better and better. Now, one thing about them is they have not recruited at the elite level that the Georgias and Alabamas and LSUs. You would think they would, and I don't have anyone go look up the 247 numbers or Rivals, wherever, but that's not really, Dan Mullen has never been known as the elite recruiter, but it hasn't really mattered. He, you know, at Mississippi State, number one in the country. I think they will get players good enough to be a real threat to Georgia and the SEC East over the next, you know, half decade.
I said when I started on this show that I think, before it's all said and done, Dan Mullen will win a national championship at Florida. And I stand by that.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at all. It's there's more team that, you know, more teams than ever, quote unquote, trying to win a national championship. You know, 15, 20 years ago, I think the list of teams that you'd say could win a national championship was probably a little bit smaller. But now with coaching salaries, facilities, teams, Texas A&Ms of the world paying coaches, you know, everyone's making $4 million. But, yeah, I would put my money in the Dan Mullen camp.
And Florida should send a gift basket every year to Chip Kelly. Every single year, a really nice gift basket.
It's crazy how those things work out.
Thanks for saying no.
Thanks for not, you know, not wanting to handle the heat of the SEC East and wanting to go coach in L.A.
But before we let you go, I did want to get your we were talking about Tennessee earlier, but just the thing on the sideline with Garantano and Jeremy Pruitt, what were your thoughts? Did you think the outrage is warranted, or is that just hard coaching?
I don't know how much outrage there is. Like, we sit here and talk and said, everyone's killing Jeremy Pruitt. No, half the people are killing Jeremy Pruitt. Half the people are saying it's no big deal. Like, that's the way we argue now in the social media world. Your point is arguing against everyone else says this. This is going to be a boring answer. I don't think he should have done it, but I don't really have a problem with it. It's not like, I don't know, do you guys remember Bill Curry? I mean, this is going back, but Bill Curry in the 92 Sugar Bowl at Alabama, he grabbed one of his guys. Basically, he was like, we don't play like Miami plays. Like, Miami was doing some crazy stuff, and Alabama guy taunted, and he grabbed him and whipped it around. It wasn't even close to that. You know, he kind of pulled his hand off. My issue with Pruitt wasn't really that play. I think he needs to calm down.
Lou Holtz used to drag guys off the field.
I think he needs to be almost even less emotional on the side. Like, I think he coaches like a fan sometimes. Going back to that BYU game when he just ripped Alante Taylor. Like, there's in the final plays of a close game. You got to be the CEO of the program. You let your position coach rip him apart, or you wait till the film session. The way he's just kind of running down the sidelines, it's going crazy. He needs to be more.
It alerted people that, hey, something was up with that play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's when the Jordan Rodgers of the world start looking and sifting through and say, you know what? He went on his own on that play. And then all of a sudden people know what happened.
Right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being emotional.
Maybe they would have found it anyway, but he certainly called some, hey, something's up.
I just think he needs to be a more presidential. Maybe that's not.
Well, I don't know if he's going to do. He's a football coach.
Yeah, a big time Division I head football coach. I mean, he's on a huge stage. Do you think this is the beginning of the end for Garantano in Knoxville, that this is kind of the end? It feels that way.
It feels that way. I don't know how a kid bounces back from that. I mean, that was pretty a national undressing, so to speak. And it's clear he wasn't in the best of graces with that staff to begin with. And, you know, I don't know the update. I've seen some tweets. I don't think we'll know the update on Brandon Maurer until later this week. But that's two concussions. So,
but they have another option than that.
Yeah, it was JT Stroud. You know.
Yeah. So I guess we'll know, right?
Yeah, we'll find out. It's, you know, he's a talented kid that just has been inconsistent and hasn't, you know, there's a disconnect there somewhere between him and the coaching staff.
Joshua has tweeted at all of us and said, as a diehard Michigan fan, I'm not calling for Harbaugh's head, but like you guys said, who do you get at this point for the rest of the season? This conversation will be different next year if it's a similar season. So
I mean, every year that they don't win, the argument becomes more valid. But we don't need to rehash that.
And meanwhile, you have Ohio State. People are really on board with that train right now, saying, well, they're better than Clemson. They should be better than Clemson. Like, it doesn't mean anything right now, but the eye test is certainly impressive with Ohio State right now. And it's not as impressive for Clemson as we thought, right?
No doubt. Ohio State has just been completely dominant. Now, Clemson, you know, you can Trevor Lawrence threw two picks or whatever. They still beat a pretty decent Louisville team easily, so I'm not off the Clemson bandwagon. But if you're looking for a team that has been dominant every week, no hiccups, it's Ohio State and LSU, in my opinion, have been the two most impressive teams as far as on the field performance, with Alabama right behind them.
Dabo making that kid that got ejected go home with the staff on a bus.
I gotta watch my.
He did not fly home with the team.
I gotta watch my performance in the next road game. If I don't do a good job on the sideline,
has that ever happened to you?
Joe Fisher's gonna make me take a train back to Nashville. I won't be able to go on the team plane.
Good to see you, Mitch. Thanks for doing.
Can you get a train back? I don't. It would not be a passenger.
Can you take a train from Columbia, South Carolina to Nashville? I don't think so.
Not as they say in the Plains Trans Road, not a people's train.
Yeah. Maybe go Amtrak.
People train Wichita. Mitch Light, Athlon Sports, Vanderbilt sideline reporter. We'll come back, wrap up the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.